Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Big Nerdy Questions BNQ Episode 4. Tonight, we take a serious look at DC Comics. Why so serious, you ask? Because we're analyzing the Clown Prince of Crime, the Joker. And our question this week is, the Joker? Best DC villain or overrated character? I'll say out front that we don't have anything in between, because in almost all the lists we've seen, the Joker is consistently ranked as the best DC villain. So if he isn't, he's clearly been overrated by somebody. With me on the panel tonight are Rachel.
Hello.
Matt.
This guy again.
And joining us for the first time, you heard his thoughts 2 weeks ago about Cyclops and Beast, but joining us in person for the first time, we have Josh P.
Hey.
So before we get started on our discussion of the Clown Prince, we do have a sponsorship to take care of. Matt, who's our sponsor tonight?
Well, that's right, Josh. Tonight's episode is brought to you by the Carolina Reaper. When you love spicy food but hate your tongue, eat a Carolina Reaper.
And also, before we get into the meat of the question this week, we have two other things to take care of. First, we have this week's Big Nerdy Recommendation. And as I said in the first episode, we're not always going to do books. We're going to do some other obscure nerd works that I think you guys should check out. And this week's recommendation is actually a computer game. It's called Sherlock Holmes, The Secret of the Silver Earring. It was released in North America in 2004 by Frogwares Interactive Studio. It's in the same vein as Myst, The Secret of Monkey Island, and other classic point-and-click games, but done in the style of Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes. You interview a lot of different suspects and witnesses. You analyze evidence both in terms of collecting it and also conducting actual tests with chemical formulas and measuring footprints and things like that. The game allows you to put together the different theories of the crime in a way that feels organic and it feels true to the characters of Holmes and Watson. The graphics are not perfect because it's 2004, but the plot is well designed and the mechanics are fantastic. And if you like this game, Frogwares has made several other Sherlock Holmes games and they're still releasing them today. If you're a Lovecraft fan, check out Sherlock Holmes Awakened, which actually is based on the Cthulhu stories. There's also a Sherlock Holmes versus Jack the Ripper. And the most recent release is The Testament of Sherlock Holmes. So check those out if you're into point-and-click games or murder mysteries. You will not be disappointed. Also, we have some feedback from our X-Men episode, in addition to the wonderful feedback from Fabian, which we thank him again for, hashtag Dadpool. We had several listeners... Exactly. We had several listeners tell us which powers they felt would be worse. We had a listener, Sean, who wrote in and said that Wolverine would be his, the Wolverine's powers would be worse. But he said in a joking fashion, if Wolverine was ever angry in the worst time, the claws would get stuck in something. So if he was giving a lecture and you got annoyed, claws in the podium. In a library, you get annoyed, claws through the books, which can get really disturbing and really cost prohibitive very quickly. One other person, Corey, chimed in and said the worst power is disaster misplacement. The idea that if you know a disaster is coming, you have the power to make it hit another location on Earth, but you cannot prevent it, which causes unending ethical problems because you may decide to move it over an ocean, but you may destroy the ecosystem there. So you never really know if your act is going to save lives or hurt them, and you just have to make the best utilitarian decisions that you can make. So I guess that's an offshoot of Storm's ability, similar but not the same. Thank you guys for your feedback. We would love to hear more about it. And I know you have feedback on the prequels episode from last week. We're waiting for more of that. We'll have a segment on that soon. We know you have thoughts on the thought of evil Jar Jar and the thought the prequels are actually good if you can scrape past the obvious bad. So please continue to send us your feedback on episodes 2 and 3 as well as on this episode. So Now we turn to this week's big nerdy question. Before we get into the other DC villains, I wanted us to just talk about the Joker first and try to pinpoint who or what exactly is the Joker. So I'll open it up to the panel. When you guys think of the Joker, what comes to mind? Josh?
He's the Joker. There's no other way to describe this guy. He is the clown prince of crime. He is psychotic. He's the Joker, man. You can't put a label on him.
For me, having been a child of the 80s and 90s, I have to say that when I think of the Joker, the first thing that springs into my mind is the portrayal of the Joker in the animated series from the 1990s as voiced by Mark Hamill. I mean, to me, that is absolutely the most iconic Joker. Much love for Heath Ledger's Joker. Extremely dark. Excellent acting. But when I think of the Joker, I cannot think of any voice other than Mark Hamill's just cutting through my brain.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Matt. That was actually, I believe it started in 1992, the Batman animated series. That was my first big jump into DC. It's still one of my favorites. Yeah, I'm just gonna have to agree with Matt because that was my first introduction, and you know they didn't overuse him either. So you still got a nice plethora of other villains to learn about, but he was definitely the arch nemesis.
Also, him constantly annoying just the ever living daylights out of Batman by calling him my cutesy pet names was absolutely hilarious to me.
And that's a good segue.
You can tell he's irritated when he gets called Batsy.
Well, because I think a lot of the incarnations of the Joker call him Bats, but the DC animated universe took that to the next step with all the cutesy names. So we should go ahead and put this up front with the Joker. And this goes with a lot of comic characters, but especially one that has been around as long as the Joker, who first appeared in 1940 in Batman number 1. So we've had him for such a long time. There are a lot of different incarnations of the Joker. And not just on the screen, from the Batman original television series to Jack Nicholson to Heath Ledger to Mark Hamill, but also in comics and in video games. So, for example, with games, the Joker in Injustice is not the same as the Joker in the Arkham games. But in the comics as well, you have a wide variety of characteristics of the Joker. Let's try to pull out some of the attributes that are shared by most, if not all, incarnations of the Joker. And I think the first one is his maniacal mixing of evil with humor. I mean, it's almost obvious to say, but the Joker is always trying to commit a crime in such a way that there's some little twist in it to allow for dark humor, that he's going to kill you with a gas, but the gas is going to make you smile. He's going to kill you with a pencil, but it's going to be a magic trick.
Best magic trick ever.
It really is. So what do you guys think of the Joker's use of humor in his crimes?
Sometimes it is absolutely hilarious, and sometimes it is worse than some of the puns I've heard you say, Josh. You know, sometimes it's Joker. sometimes his jokes go too far, of course, but, you know, an example of how the Joker laughs off every kill he makes is, you know, if he shoots a guy in the head, he'll say, oh, I bet you needed that, like you needed a hole in the head.
Yeah, so your last thing you're going to hear before you die is a horrible pun.
That's a terrible way to go, my friend.
That's basically what would happen if Josh number one became a serial killer.
Well, if I were the Joker, I would use
that would be your modus operandi. I'm sorry.
Well, if I were the Joker, I would make sure to use a knife, so I would have a piercing good wit.
See, he's already practicing.
It's there. It's going to happen.
This show needs a soundboard so I can play some crickets.
Yeah.
Well,
or you could pour vermouth on him, so because you have a dry wit. There you go.
Nice. Ooh. Nice. Okay. That's the tonic for what ails you.
Apply cool water directly to affected area.
Well done. But, I mean, so, all the times we've seen the Joker, he's always used humor, and that's partially due to his origin story. There's a plenty of origin stories, though, for the Joker. In a couple of origin stories, most prominently in The Killing Joke, the Joker is actually a failing comedian. So he takes the persona of the Joker because he thinks life is a twisted joke because of his accident or his psychosis or what have you. In other incarnations, like the Joker in The Dark Knight, it seems like the humor is simply an extension of his love of anarchy. It's just that's the way he's going to cause chaos, and chaos is funny.
With The Dark Knight, with the discussing origin stories, one of my favorite things about the character of the Joker is really brought together and put on display in that film. And that is, he has so many origin stories, but rather than displaying them, it's always him telling the origin stories. And I think he's one of the most brilliant, unreliable narrators.
Exactly.
In comic books. Because rather than having an unreliable narrator about him, he actually takes on the role personally as the unreliable narrator, which right. I love unreliable narrator stories.
And we can't trust anything he says in that movie. Josh, do you have something to say about the unreliable narrator of the Joker?
When I was playing Batman Arkham City, you'd always hear the you could unlock interview tapes of him being interviewed by psychiatrists. And when he is being interviewed by, I think it was Hugo Strange, or no, he was being interviewed by Harley Quinn, of course, he starts telling a background story, and he gets stopped because that has been a completely different one from each of the ones he's given in previous weeks before when he's been asked to tell his background story. So I agree. I love his unreliable narrative.
You know, and I think to contrast that, 2 weeks ago when we discussed the X-Men, we talked about Magneto's origin story in quite some depth, and how Magneto's origins in the concentration camps are one of the most defining characteristics about Magneto. It formed his personality. It gave him the groundwork to believe humanity would mistreat him as a mutant, and that's why he is the way he is. And he's usually propped up as one of the best Marvel villains. In the Joker, the best DC villain, the origin story is never reliable. You have nothing to build it on.
The thing I find fascinating, especially comparing Joker with Magneto, is that, you know, I realize one's Marvel, one's DC, but they're almost each other's antithesis, because Magneto has such a well-defined, articulated, set-in-concrete background. And there's a lot of depth and expansion that's been done to it. That he has this huge, rich story, but it's set. And then you go to the Joker, and no one really knows what his real background is, because depending on who's asking him, he's going to give a different story, and depending on what mood he's in, he'll give that person a different story from day to day. So I think they make a fascinating study in opposites.
I agree. Rachel, do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, not only do you have one of my favorite tropes, the unreliable narrator, but these are comics, so he has different versions of himself anyway. So it's almost, I don't want to go and say he's like Deadpool in that, you know, he almost knows in a way that what he says doesn't matter. Whether he knows he's a comic book character, I don't think so, of course. But then again, he might be crazy enough to know and just haven't said anything. But he definitely, it just adds a whole other layer to the whole thing. And he's dynamic enough that it changes. And then in some incarnations, he'll be more gritty. In some incarnations, he'll be more slapstick. It's just, or, you know, more PG or more R, depending on what we're talking about. He just has so many layers.
And another, when you say that a lot of his words don't matter, we can contrast that with another one of Batman's most iconic villains, the Riddler. Where every word matters. It may not matter in the way that you think, but with the Riddler, everything is so precisely constructed because it's a riddle. But and so you often have people who aren't as familiar with the Batman universe question, why do you need Joker and the Riddler? Because they're similar, but that's maybe the biggest difference in the characters. The Riddler usually isn't lying. It's just hard to understand what he's talking about. But you can never trust the Joker.
Yeah, the Riddler has almost like a code.
Exactly.
And from what I can tell, the Joker does not. Or if he does, it changes every day and follows his own rules anyway. So.
Yeah. And the other thing that you mentioned that I want to talk about real quick is the Joker's range from PG to R. Because I'm going to briefly run down some of the Joker's most heinous crimes in some of the various iterations. In The Dark Knight, he blows up a hospital and he kills Rachel and creates Two-Face. In the original Batman film, he tries to kill everyone in Gotham with laughing gas and completely destroys a museum full of priceless artwork. He also danced with the devil in the pale moonlight, so there you go. In the comics, though, it gets even worse. In the Injustice comic that the video game is based on, he kills Jimmy Olsen. He uses the Scarecrow toxin to confuse Superman into killing Lois Lane. And then he nukes Metropolis. In The Killing Joke, he shoots and paralyzes Barbara Gordon, takes photographs that almost mimic sexual assault, and then forces Commissioner Gordon to go through a carnival ride looking at his daughter's worst moment in her life.
And Commissioner Gordon is naked.
Absolutely. And in A Death in the Family, he kills Jason Todd, the second Joker. Second Robin. He kills Jason Todd, and not in a quick way either. He tortures him and brutally destroys him with a crowbar. And I think the newest addition to the Joker's pantheon of insanity is Death of the Family, where he kidnaps everyone in the Bat family in the New 52 of DC. He has them over to a dinner. He's kidnapped Batman, and when Batman wakes up, he reveals that he has brainwashed Alfred into cutting off the faces of everyone there and making them eat their own face. So there is a huge, huge range in what the Joker does. And the Joker of the original Batman series, Cesar Romero's Joker, his most heinous plot was having a fake charity show to lure Batman and Robin in to expose their identities on live television. That Joker would not recognize the Joker of The Dark Knight, who would not recognize the Joker of A Death of the Family. Josh, what do you think about that pantheon of evil?
In the 60s series, didn't he also steal a professional surfer's ability in order to beat Batman in a surfing contest once?
Yes, he did.
So you go from that to making someone eat their faces. I think that says it all. That is range, my friend.
Yeah. That is absolute range. I think the point I was just trying to get to is that he is, for lack of a better word, adaptable to whatever the writer who was controlling him wants to do. Yes, he's an agent of chaos. He's an agent of evil. But you can make that on a wide range of what you want to apply that to. And he can be evil purely in murder. He can be evil in causing plots. He can also be evil in terms of manipulating others, which leads us into Harley Quinn. Because I don't think it's fair to discuss the Joker without talking about Harley. I should point out for our listeners, we are recording this before Suicide Squad is released. So we are not going to include Suicide Squad in our evaluation of the Joker. We've seen the previews, we've seen the images of Harley and of Joker, but I don't think it's fair to pass judgment on that either way until we've seen it. That said, does anybody have any thoughts on the character of Harley Quinn?
For me, the definitive Harley Quinn has to be Tara Strong. And that's actually one of the reasons, actually it's one of the main reasons that I'm standoffish about the Suicide Squad film, is because not only did they not use the iconic Harley Quinn, they used a newer interpretation that I believe is currently active in the comics, but it's one of those things where it's the same character, but pretty much only in name and little bits of the attitude. Because the new Harley Quinn is this dark, petty criminal type thing. But the Harley Quinn that I know and love, that I grew up with, and is technically the original Harley Quinn, being that she was created for the purpose of the television show to be in alongside Mark Hamill, is that she was a brilliant psychiatrist who the Joker drove insane through their therapy sessions. So this is a woman with a doctorate who's extremely intelligent, but has been driven mad. And that iteration of the character, I think, is utterly fantastic. The newer versions feel kind of dumbed down as a character.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Harley represents how some of us, in our deepest, darkest, unconscious, and the id, if you use a Freudian term, are really attracted to what Joker can do. I mean, have we not had a time in our lives when we want to say, let's blow everything up and start again? Chaos is a good thing. So I think Harley represents that most base reaction to Joker, because I feel like the two reactions to Joker, most people are going to be appalled, but some people like Harley are going to make him their cult hero.
Well, he does have a certain appeal, because he's shown himself to be an absolute master at controlling his image. Seriously, the Kardashians could take notes from this man. And probably should.
At least he knows how to smile.
Oh, burn. But he seems to be in almost complete control over how he is perceived. He created an image of himself for Harley Quinn to see that she looks up to and idolizes and will follow into the depths of hell and back and then some. But then for Batman, being the alleged world's greatest detective, who seemingly can't solve any crime without beating someone unconscious, he can't figure out the Joker because the Joker doesn't want him to figure him out.
You know, just realize when you're talking about the Joker's manipulation of image, to say a phrase that probably hasn't ever been uttered before, the Joker is the biggest optimist in the DC universe. And I say that because no matter what happens to him, he thinks he's going to win. If he gets stuck in Arkham Asylum in a straitjacket, he's going to find a way to seduce the psychiatrist who's put him in there and get out. Everything is an opportunity. Even his death. Every time he's died in the various incarnations, it has served his own purpose to either corrupt the bat or corrupt somebody else. So he's always thinking, I'm going to win. Just give me the cards on the table. You gotta admire that level of confidence.
Right.
And there's one other thing I want to bring up with the Joker. And earlier we mentioned he's the antithesis of Magneto. But a lot of people who say he's the best DC villain also say he is the proper antithesis to Batman. And one of the key differences, which we should establish for DC, is a different thing from Marvel. In DC comics, usually, the heroes do not kill anyone. As a rule, the DC heroes avoid killing to such an extent that when they had the crossover with Mortal Kombat, their fatalities were called heroic brutalities. So they avoid killing. The Joker thinks killing is fun, and he's always trying to convince the Bat to kill somebody.
I do have a quick correction I need to make about something I said.
Okay.
Harley Quinn voice in the animated series was Arlene Sorkin, not Tara Strong. Tara Strong actually played her in most of the video games. However, she and Arlene Sorkin's voices are nearly identical. However, Tara Strong did mention that she actually wanted to play Harley Quinn in Suicide Squad and was turned down because they were not using the traditional version of the character.
Thank you for that clarification. Big shout out to Arlene and to Tara Strong, because they both did such fantastic work with that character.
Great.
So what do you guys think about the dichotomy between Batman and Joker? Rachel, do you have any thoughts on that?
If for one moment Batman acted more like the Joker, he would have killed the Joker and the Joker would be dead. Game over. But he won't, and the Joker knows it. So he basically can do whatever he wants. And he knows that he can. So he's just gonna have fun. And whatever his feeling of fun is. As I believe in most incarnations, he says, you know, all it takes is one bad day. And that's basically, he always tries to push Batman. It's almost like, It's almost like he wants suicide by Batman. He's always trying to push Batman to be as dark as he is, whether or not it's some bizarre, masochistic sort of... I don't think anyone can figure Joker out, even if they tried. So, like, look what happened to Harley. That's not gonna happen. I'm gonna go with the hashtag suicide by Batman.
That is our hashtag of the week. Suicide by Batman.
Hashtag suicide by Batman.
I think I just figured out my thought process for this one.
And here to have our callback to the 70s, unlike with MASH, suicide by Batman is not painless.
On the note of what Rachel was saying, I think the Joker realized many, many years ago that everyone else in DC has a set of rules that they follow. And it's their own set of rules, but everyone has rules. And he's realized that because everyone else is bound by their rules, he doesn't have to follow anyone's rules at all, as long as he does things in a way that it would not be within their individual rules to kill him. He is unstoppable. He's gaming the system at an insane level.
Do you think that's why Joker consistently goes after the mafia in Gotham? Because he knows that there's the threat they'll kill him? And it makes it more exciting for his sadomasochistic self?
Well, there's actually a fan theory that the Dark Knight, the film Dark Knight, the Dark Knight isn't Batman, it's the Joker. Because when you actually go back and analyze the film, every single person he kills in the entire movie, with the exception of Rachel, is either a criminal or corrupt.
Thanks for killing me, Joker. Way to go.
No Rachels were harmed in the making of BNQ episode 4.
Yet.
Plot twist.
You know, I think you've got a point there. And Christopher Nolan is a dark and calculating man, so I wouldn't put it past him to have that meaning, to at least have a double meaning there. I honestly think it's a triple meaning for that movie, because I think The Dark Knight also refers... I always thought it referred to Harvey Dent.
Well,
because he's the white knight turned bad.
Yeah, with the death of Rachel in the film, it stands to an extent that you could argue that he actually meant for Harvey Dent to die in the explosion, because he switched the addresses of where they were, hoping that the emotions would win out, hoping that logic and justice and Batman's rules would win out, and he would go try to save Harvey Dent and instead save the girl. But he did it the other way and wound up saving Harvey Dent because he let his emotions win out, which went against what the Joker expected him to do. And that's the only innocent death at the Joker's hands in the film, is the one that you could argue was the one that he wanted Batman to save so he could kill the other.
So you could say it was Batman's fault.
Yeah. So technically you could say Batman killed her.
And I should point out, in The Dark Knight, what really foils the Joker isn't necessarily bats. It's the people on the two boats overcoming their prejudices and not arming the bomb. So he successfully predicted Batman's moves, but he didn't predict the moves of the average citizen.
Yeah, well, one person is one thing, a group of people is another. So
exactly.
I think that probably plays in.
He took too many psychology classes and not enough sociology, a lesson for us all.
It's like that kid that took psychology 101, and they're like, yes, I know everything now. I'm going to diagnose all the things.
You sure don't mean philosophy 101?
No, that's the ones who think they know how the universe works.
Yeah, the psychology 101 major, you go up to him and say, you know what, I'm feeling kind of sad today, and they respond with, you have dissociative disorder, your other personality is a white whale named Steve who likes to eat Cheetos and bask in the morning glow.
You leave Steve the hell out of this.
And my
they almost had it right, except it's a narwhal, so.
And Steve the whale, or Steve the narwhal, you're right, that was a fluke reference.
Sometimes I hate you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And now that I made a pun worse than the Joker, I say we wrap up our part one of this episode about the Joker and open it up. because the question is the Joker the best DC villain? So, to make that determination, we have to compare him with the other major DC villains. Now, obviously, there are way too many DC villains to go through them all. And everyone's personal favorite will vary based on which franchise they're most interested in, which villain they know the most about. But I think there's a few villains in the DC universe that are at least could be as iconic as Joker, maybe not as good. The first one, we'll start outside the Bat universe, and then we'll go back into the Bat universe. Outside the Bat universe, I have to introduce the character of Lex Luthor as another iconic DC villain. But I know, Matt, you have some thoughts on Lex Luthor.
I think Lex Luthor is only... I personally believe the only reason Lex Luthor's name is synonymous as a villain has nothing to do with Lex Luthor and everything to do with him being the primary villain in many of the modern iterations of Superman. As a character, I think he's extremely poorly written and just utterly shallow. He's a billionaire who wants to kill Superman because, well, he doesn't like there being a being with more power than him. That's it. That's his whole character. I just think it's an extremely shallow, not well thought out character.
Rachel, Josh, do you have any thoughts on Lex?
I agree 100% with Matt. I am not a fan.
I agree. I also, now the way that he's described it, I'm thinking he should really be going up against Bruce Wayne. Because then you would have a battle of the billionaires, and that would
literally just be throwing $100 bills at each other.
So it's not just Storm who can make it rain.
Yeah. I mean, that would be, I would actually find that, like, if someone did a weird Lex Luthor versus Bruce Wayne, like, political drama or some crap, like,
I would read that.
Like House of Cards.
Can
but,
we
oh
throw
God,
in,
they get both run for president. There
can
you
we
go.
Throw in Tony know. Stark as well, just for fun?
Oh, God.
That would climax.
Tony
would
be
the third president. The High Society Historical Auction.
Oh, I have
that,
an idea.
That would be the big climactic battle at the end.
The three
they
of them...
They get into a bidding war over the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah.
And then Indiana Jones shows up and just takes it.
The three of them fight for the services of Alfred in a knockdown, drag-out, triple-threat fight.
Alfred would win that fight.
No kidding.
Well, who would their seconds be? We've got Alfred for Batman. We've got...
Jarvis.
Iron Man, for Tony Stark, or Rhodey. And then for Lex Luthor, well, he sort of does most things on his own, but in some incarnations, Luthor is actually the head of the gang of supervillains. I'm not going to use specific names because they're called different things in every incarnation, but he only is the head of it because he bribed everybody off. Usually, the other villain that shows up in that almost always is Captain Cold, from the Flash universe, so his second would be very frosty. I don't think he'd be useful against Rhodey or Jarvis. He may make Alfred have his sciatica act up, so that's not too good.
Oh, no. Actually, it might be more interesting to just do Battle of the Higher Health at this point.
Well, the thing you have to worry about with the battle, which actually brings us back to the Joker, is if Batman has Alfred as his second, what if it's the iteration of Batman where Alfred is the Joker?
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah. Plot twist, Alfred kills them all.
And it all comes full circle, listeners.
And there's also...
It was a tangent. It wasn't.
There's
don't
also...
forget the other one where Batman is Mr. Wayne and the Joker is Martha Wayne.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's great. I'm only thinking about this all day now.
It's just so creepy how her and the Heath Ledger Joker look so similar, though.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, it is.
Plot twist. Heath Ledger's Joker is the son of Martha Wayne in the alternate DC universe.
Oh, delicious.
Which makes Heath Ledger's Joker Bruce Wayne.
Dun, dun, dun.
Make it happen, Chris Nolan. So we write off Lex Luthor. Let's go to another DC villain. Who the only other Superman villain that's reached as iconic status. Now, I should preface this. My favorite Superman villain is actually Brainiac. I like the idea of a supercomputer going around the universe, deleting planets because he's just turning them into data. But he's not really, he hasn't crossed over into any iconic level. The only other one that even's close is General Zod, because of Man of Steel as well as Superman 2. And Superman 2, the original, what fantastic uniforms and chest hair for General Zod.
He was a beautiful man.
Yes, he was.
He was a beautiful man. But is General Zod a good villain?
He's all right.
I think he's a very traditional villain in that he is a megalomaniac. He has a clear goal, which is the conquest of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
He attacks centers of power, such as when he actually goes into the White House with a rifle and starts shooting people. He's the old school villain. He's like, I don't care about superheroes. I just want to take over the world. And if they get in my way, I'll try to kill them.
He'll drop the mic.
He's refreshingly predictable.
Hashtag.
As counterintuitive as that sounds.
So that's our other hashtag for the week, refreshingly predictable. What else is refreshingly predictable? Let us know.
Every episode of Law & Order ever.
I don't know if that's refreshing, but it is predictable. I'm going to go with Bojangles Sweet Tea, because shout out. And
big ups, Bojangles.
Just in case anyone was wondering where we might be podcasting from, that gives you a small hint. It narrows it down slightly.
The American South.
A little bit. Now, I think it's safe to say Superman and Batman are in a class of themselves as far as fame. But the other DC heroes, at least in the Justice League, deserve a mention. Wonder Woman and Flash, in my opinion, do not have any iconic villains in the same category. They have villains, but none on the iconic level. Do we all agree on this?
Yes.
I do think Green Lantern has one villain that could be argued, and that's Sinestro. He is the head of the Yellow Lantern Corps. For those of you unfamiliar with the Green Lantern Corps and our listeners, essentially, the Green Lanterns, for lack of a better phrase, are space cops. Their power, their rings that they can create anything with, are powered by different emotions. The Green Lantern, all Green Lanterns, are powered by willpower. The Yellow Lanterns are powered by fear. And Sinestro is the main Yellow Lantern. And he is, I think, another iconic DC villain because he is the embodiment of the power of fear and of fear-mongering. But is he better than the Joker? Clearly not at the same level of iconicness as the Joker. So we'll move back to... before we go back to the Bat Universe, there is one other villain I want to introduce from the DC Comics. The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are a DC property, which means that we have to talk about Shredder briefly. Do you guys think that Shredder is a better villain than the Joker?
No.
No.
He does have very pointy hands.
This is true.
Yes.
He's a budget Wolverine. There you go.
But he's not even the leader of the bad guys.
Yeah, he's technically Krang's lieutenant.
Yeah.
So what we're saying is, Shredder might be decent, but he's only good if he's in charge of a splinter cell.
Oh, God.
I can hear the listeners groaning from here.
Yes, and this is like 3 weeks ago.
Thank you. So, I think that means we're going to take it back to the Bat Universe. And is it fair to say that of the DC characters, Batman has the best rogues gallery?
Yes.
Okay. Briefly talk about some of the other villains, and we'll just go down the line. And I'll just name a villain, and you guys can just tell me your thoughts. First, the Riddler.
I enjoy the Riddler, but I would never accuse him of being the best villain in DC, or even the best out of Batman's rogues gallery. He is really good to have when there are other villains also involved. He's like an accent flavor.
Nice.
Oregano's good, but not by itself, you know?
He's the oregano of villains. I love it.
That could be another hashtag.
He's also easily mistaken for marijuana.
Oh, okay, yeah. I've always liked the Riddler.
Take villains, we'll get suspended you from school for 400, Alex.
Why do you have the Riddler in a baggie?
Wow. I thought it was Basil, man.
Dude, Michael doesn't look nothing like that. He's a freaking... Dude, just no. You're staying out of my kitchen.
Hashtag medical Riddler.
He's the cure for what ails you.
Agreed.
Actually, I'm gonna make the argument that he's more like a bay leaf. Okay. You cook
you put
with
him in for flavor.
You cook with him. He serves his purpose. And then when you go to eat the thing that the bay leaf is in, you're like, "What the hell is this?" And you take it out and you throw it away.
So that's the Riddler. Next we have Danny DeVito's Penguin.
Specifically Danny DeVito, or can we just
talk about the Penguin in general? When I consider the Penguin, I think of his character and I get a little sick in my mouth. But we can talk about any of the Penguin iterations.
I think the Penguin had an interesting concept, and one of the biggest crimes that DC has committed that wasn't on film was never really developing that character. I think he's one-dimensional.
True.
I agree with that.
He's a mob boss, gun runner. That's all he really ever does. I like the origin story that comes from the Arkham video game series, where instead of a monocle, it's the butt end of a beer bottle is lodged into his eye socket. But
yeah, I remember reading
that. That makes him like 1.5 dimensional, that his monocle has an interesting story in that game. He's still the same Penguin to me.
My eyepiece is interesting.
So it's the best origin story for corrective lenses in comic books.
And I know how much hate I'm going to get for mentioning this on a podcast about DC characters, but the best Penguin ever made has got to be the Penguin from Gotham, the TV series on Fox right now. That is the best attempt I've ever seen in actually developing a Penguin character, and he is fantastic.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. He's really good in that role. And I think, Matt, I know you're not a big Gotham follower, but I would argue that the Penguin is finally getting developed on Gotham the way the character has needed to be developed for 30, 40 years.
If they go through and actually fully develop him, then when the whole thing hits Netflix, I will binge it in mass.
Fantastic. But I don't think the Penguin is on the same level as the Joker. Are we all agreed on that?
No, absolutely. Not even in the same class.
So next, I think we should bring up the most recent villain for Batman in the films, aside from the Affleck Batman, in the last Nolan film, Bane. You know, Bane,
I like Bane.
He's interesting.
For me, he was just a letdown after The Dark Knight. And to be fair, I don't think it's Bane's fault. I think you could have put anybody in that movie, and it just would have been a letdown from not just the fact that it was Joker, but it was Heath Ledger's Joker. If I were them, I would have saved the Joker for last. Granted, no way they could have done that, you know, later on, but I wouldn't have made the Joker the second movie. Even if it wasn't a very good Joker. You could almost argue at this point, if the Joker's not the best villain, is he the most iconic? And I think a lot of people might say yes to that one, so I'm just really surprised they did that for the second one.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I agree that Bane's a bit of a disappointment in the film. I've got to bring up the comic series Nightfall, which introduced Bane. And
yes.
And Bane being introduced in that series is a villain that could have gone to the level of the Joker. And for those of you that don't know Nightfall, Bane essentially in one night, we had never met Bane, he orchestrated a plot for every major rogue in the Bat Gallery to have a plot on different parts of Gotham of different degrees of severity on the same night, but stagger them apart so that Batman could stop them all. But when Batman gets home to Wayne Manor, Bane, we meet for the first time, ambushes Batman and breaks his back. The scene in The Dark Knight Rises, exactly, break the bat. The scene in The Dark Knight Rises where he actually takes him over his head and gives him a wrestling backbreaker and breaks his back is a direct take from Nightfall, except in the comics, he's not cured miraculously in a weird prison. His back stays broken for a long time, and Bruce Wayne is actually replaced as by Dick Grayson and then later by Azrael in the role of the Batman.
Yeah, I really think that in the film, they really, really sold Bane short. Because in the comics, I thought he was a brilliant villain. Because name one other villain in the entirety of DC, all of it, who is not only capable of that level of detailed planning, but is able to get the entire rogues gallery to agree on anything. A lot of these people hate each other, and they would fight each other to the death if given the opportunity. So he makes the plan, gets the entire rogues gallery together under his own banner, and then actually defeats Batman in single combat. Name anyone who's defeated Batman in single combat.
He's the only one I know of. I mean, because Batman even defeated Superman in one-on-one combat. So, there you go.
The only other person who has beat Superman in single combat fairly is Muhammad Ali.
Yes.
He punched him out in a boxing match.
God bless America.
Merc.
But I honestly, to bring an X-Men parallel to it, I've always thought of Bane as what Beast would be if he were evil.
Yeah.
Because he's super powerful, but he's also incredibly smart. And he's also the way he is because of an external influence. You know, the venom toxin is similar to a mutation in my book.
Yeah.
So I think there's a parallel there. So I would actually love to see a crossover comic where Bane battles Beast. I think it would be very interesting to see, to read. But I don't think, we're all in agreement, Bane had potential, but he's not quite Joker level.
No.
I would say that the comic version of Bane is better than, not all, but better than some of the interpretations of the Joker.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I think he's probably in the top three DC villains. I really think he is.
And I think that there's three more villains I want to quickly mention. The first is Ra's al Ghul, Talia, the League of Assassins. I personally am of the opinion that Ra's, as he's called in a lot of the media, he's an interesting villain, but I don't think he's been used often enough to be on the same level as the Joker.
No, I think he's too infrequent.
Okay, so moving along, and I wanted to mention him because someone would say in the comments we forgot him. We didn't forget him. And there are some villains we're going to skip over, clearly. But the two that we have to mention that I think may come the closest in terms of complexity to the Joker are Harvey Dent / Two-Face and Selina Kyle / Catwoman.
Because there is nothing more complex than the relationship between Batman and Selina Kyle.
There really isn't.
For the sake of my sanity,
I know where
agree
you're going
to exclude that abomination that Halle Berry committed to film.
Agreed.
And that wasn't Selina Kyle, that was Patience Phillips.
No, we right, no.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
We blocked it from our memory.
Exactly.
We're not. Let's it's not happening. So let's stick with the good Catwomen, and there are plenty of good ones, both in the comics and on screen.
Did she show at the same time Joker did?
Pretty much, yeah. But Catwoman's relationship, at any given time, she is a villain, an ally, and a love interest of Bruce Wayne. Like Josh P. said, I think it's one of the most complicated relationships between ostensibly protagonist-antagonist in all of DC Comics.
The only reason I would argue against calling Catwoman one of the best DC villains is because she started out as a villain, but I really think the last 20 or 30 years, she's really been honestly portrayed more as an anti-hero.
I think that you're right.
I really think she's more of an anti-hero now.
She kind of tiptoes on the line too much to really be called an outright villain.
I think she's a great character, but I think Joker's a better villain. So let's...
Yeah. I think her writing is brilliant.
Absolutely.
I think she's brilliantly written, especially the depth and complexity of the relationship with Batman. But I don't think she's a tried and true villain anymore. I think she has crossed the line into anti-hero.
Is Selina Kyle the best well-written female character in DC Comics?
Yes, hands down.
Yes, I agree.
Even
with
more
that,
than Diana Wonder Woman.
I would personally put Supergirl over Wonder Woman. That's just me.
I think you might be right. And I think Selina Kyle is really well-written.
I think there is an enormous amount of potential in the character of Wonder Woman, and I really hope they try to explore it with the film, but with what the way DC's been doing their films lately, I'm not holding my breath because I choose life.
Yes, meaning.
But they could develop that character, because they have a basic outline of a backstory for her. They could fill that in and make her into one of the best characters in DC by quite a bit. She could easily be at the top as a
absolutely
brilliant character if they would just take the time to get some writers in who really want to explore the character.
And fun fact, they can actually use Wonder Woman's Lasso of Truth as a crossover to 50 Shades of Grey 3.
Oh, no.
So there's that, too.
Hell no.
And that would cause some scenes of wonder, if you know what I mean. But I did mention Harvey Dent. I think Harvey Dent in the Dark Knight is just as strong as Heath Ledger's Joker. Aaron Eckhart did a fantastic job, but I think the transition of the White Knight, who's going to fight corruption, who's going to do whatever he can do, into a character that is in a way also about anarchy, because he wants to let a two-headed coin that's been marred decide people's fates, where he is... I mean, he literally is the representation of the duality of man in a comic book character. And how man can be simultaneously a force for good and a force for ill in one man. The Tommy Lee Jones version was too cartoonish. But when Two-Face is treated properly, he has a ton of potential. But I don't think he's been treated properly as often as Joker. What do you guys think?
Agreed.
Yeah, I think he's another one of those characters who I really think he has a lot of room for more development. I feel like many of the interpretations of Two-Face, especially the animated ones, and to a certain extent in The Dark Knight, he tends to feel like he's been flanderized. Like they've tried to oversimplify the character. I think he could turn into a fascinating study into the human psyche and into how we react to personal trauma.
Yeah, let's wrap up the discussion. And as we always do at the end of the B&Q, we have to answer the question. So I'll go around to the panel. I'll name your name and you give me the answer. Is the Joker the best DC villain, or is he overrated? I'll start with Rachel.
I'm going to say that he's the best DC villain, but he's overused. He's overused in the sense of if any other villain had gotten as much use as he did, they would also have extremely fleshed out backstories, more layers to them. It doesn't mean, you know, you need to like never see Joker again or anything, but I think he is the best one. I just think that he needs to not be treated as the best one. As well. I think it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
I like that answer. Josh P.
Best DC villain, unqualified, in my opinion.
And Matt.
Okay. There is going to be a caveat to mine. Mine is not going to be the shortest answer here, I'll tell you that. Yes, I do believe that the Joker is the best DC villain, but it is because there is so much more attention paid to him by the writers and the fans, and I honestly don't think that they were really trying in developing other characters. So I feel like he's the only well-developed villain in DC. Just he's the only one that's actually been actively developed and explored. I think that were the writers to get together and say, hey, let's really explore Bane, or let's really explore, you know, even General Grodd. Not Zod, Grodd.
The gorilla, ladies and gentlemen.
I think that these characters, so many of these other villains have so much room to develop that's just never been taken advantage of. While, yes, Joker is the best DC villain, I feel it's specifically because DC has done a major disservice to all the other villains by constantly obsessing over the Joker and only the Joker.
And it'll turn to me. And I agree with all three of you that Joker is the best DC villain. I do think that, Matt, you're onto something with Joker being the most emphasized and the most focused upon. I also agree with Rachel that he's been overused to an extent in the comics. They're trying to pull that back a little bit. But every time they say that, then you have a game like Arkham Knight that wasn't supposed to include the Joker, at least in all the publicity, and then it turns out he's one of the major characters in the game. So every time they try to pull back, they end up reneging on that and doing it anyway. So I think he is the best DC villain, but I think there are others out there, and I think we've talked about them, Bane, Two-Face, the Penguin, even outside of it, someone like a Sinestro or Zoom, which we didn't mention from Flash, who could be developed into a stronger character. That said, given the current work, and given the longevity of the character and his pure antithesis role to Batman, I've got to give it to Joker.
But I think that's our first unanimous decision ever
woohoo!
On the show.
It's unanimous for now, but the listeners always have a voice on BNQ. Let us know if we got this one right. Send us your tweets at BNQ Podcast and send us your emails to bignerdyquestion@gmail.com as well as bnqfeedback@gmail.com. We really do want to hear from you. If you think another villain in DC is stronger than Joker, let us know. If you think Joker has some faults we didn't get to, let us know. I think there's a lot of room in this one for your feedback. And also let us know if you think Joker is the best villain, period. Maybe you love Joker more than even we do. So just let us know your thoughts. That almost wraps it up for the night. But Matt, I think we have to kill Jar Jar Binks. How are we going to do that tonight?
Well, that's right, Josh, and also Josh, and Rachel. Well, it's going to be a bit topical for tonight's episode, because just as the Joker is constantly trying to commit suicide by Batman, well, it looks like Jar Jar ran out into the street and managed to commit suicide by sin.
Well done, Jar Jar. Jar Jar's dead, and we're not. For Rachel, Matt, and Josh B., this is Josh. Signing off, thank you very much.